Let's kick off another episode of the World Series of Politics podcast, where Brendan Bussman and Brant Eyden march down the field on key political, legislative, and regulatory developments in the gaming sector. As these titans square off on the issues facing the industry, this podcast highlights the current opportunities and challenges for expansion and reform. Let's see what the game plan is for this episode of the World Series of Politics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. I am Brant Eyden. This is Brendan Bussman, and you are joined the World Series of Politics podcast. And we are your cruise directors, sailing through the uncharted waters of legislative and regulatory issues across the country and across the world. And as always, Brendan joins us from some amazing undisclosed location. What is this amazing location Brendan is in, babe? We're playing Where's Brendan?
Well, this isn't like Where's Waldo, and as you were saying that, all of a sudden I had the Love Boat music in the background as you were talking about cruise directors.
That's what we're doing out here.
I know. But no, I am in the frozen tundra right now of Nebraska, trying to get gaming correct in some aspects, and then seeing what may or may not ever happen with sports betting here from a mobile sense, because from a retail sense, it's dismal at best. But I'm not in sunny Florida today or like our guest that we'll get to here in a little bit. I know she's in Europe, but not frozen in the frozen tundra, where the high this morning was -6, and that wasn't Celsius.
That is cold. I'm telling you what, I've had a few calls this morning, and I'm trying not to be braggadocio, but I do have the AC on because it is 85 here in Florida today. So, but hey, I came from that frozen tundra of not Nebraska, but Michigan. And of course, Nebraska is one of the 8 states that I haven't been to. And, it's on my list at some point in time. Maybe when you can get OSB done there, I'll be there, Brendan.
I'm working on it. If people would just listen to me, we'd already have it done. But that's what happens when...
That's just a good rule to live by. Just listen to Brendan Bussman and it gets done.
In addition to Nebraska,
and before we jump into our guest, I want to talk about a couple updates since our last show. We've seen a big bill introduction in Illinois, and I want to talk about the OSB movement in Hawaii. But let's just briefly chat about Illinois. Brendan, I read your comments in IGB as you were articulated. Look, here we are. We're year 4 of trying to push iGaming in Illinois, but here is the big thing. I believe that this year it may turn. The governor is desperate for revenue. The state needs revenue. Is there a real possibility for iGaming in Illinois?
I was having this conversation yesterday with somebody. I think there's two things to it. First and foremost, I think there is the real shot, because the fact of the matter is the state's broke. They need some other revenue. They need a new revenue source, because I think as they're finally maybe learning, you can only go to the golden goose so many times before you have to go get another goose. So that's the time is iGaming is the new goose along the way. So, I think there's definite possibility here. Obviously, as I said in some of my comments earlier with some of this, is it all is going to come down to tax rate and structure, and hopefully you don't have what happened in Illinois last year as it relates to sports betting and the tiered tax rate along the way. And you have something reasonable that allows a business to grow and thrive and get its feet underneath the ground before it starts jumping in and doing other things like we've seen in Ohio.
No, you're spot on. I'm with you. I think that there's an opportunity. A long way to go. We've seen this before in Illinois. But, again, I think the big takeaway from this, and we talked about this last episode, we're just seeing more and more iGaming bills being introduced across the country. And so that means the education process, continues to grow. Briefly, OSB in Hawaii, the bill has advanced as furthest I've ever seen in advance. We're now through a second committee in the House. You called me on this. I said, what's going, it's out there. I don't know. It's a very difficult state. There's no gaming in Hawaii. Any thoughts?
I still don't see it going. I know obviously there's movement. You want to say that, and it's on both the House and the Senate side. I think it's 1569 on the Senate and 1308 on the House, if I recall. Off the top of my head, there's so many bills right now floating. I hope I'm right on that, but you have some challenges there to get this done over the course of time. And we'll see if they can get it. where some of the debate has gone is obviously you've had some law enforcement and other things oppose this. Secondarily, you've had other people guess at what the revenue may or may not be over it. So there's a lot of obstacles to overcome still, but definitely one of the states we're out there monitoring.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, without
Yeah.
further ado, we're let's jump into our guest. Brandon, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest, and we'll jump right in. We're gonna move on.
Well, and this comes off of, a great ICE show that we talked about on our last episode. And one of the sessions that I actually got to moderate and developed a good rapport with what I think is one of the experts in the crypto world. And I said, hey, we got this podcast with two guys that like to talk politics, regulation, legislation, all that. Will you come on? And Andrea, agreed to come on. Welcome to the World Series of Politics. We're glad you're joining us for your first time on here. And welcome to the show. Tell our guests a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And that's too kind. I'm really thrilled and honored to be here. Andrea, my name, and currently based in London, so more focused on UK and EU and a little bit of offshore gambling. Started my career actually in regulation, financial regulation for the UK regulators. Did a bit of banking, and then iGaming has something really captivating. Once you start getting involved in that space, you never want to leave. So bringing together all the banking expertise and all the gaming expertise, I founded XDA, which is a company that really focuses on the needs of gambling and gaming conglomerates, companies. And yeah, learned a lot. Here I am.
Well, wonderful. Well,
Yeah.
we very much appreciate you taking the time, and I'm sorry that once again I can't apologize enough to my friends at Clarion for missing ICE again, and I'm sorry that
You
I know
won't miss next year.
I've got there's always next year. That's right. That's right. So, Andrea, let's jump right in. Obviously crypto, a lot of discussion in the US right now, obviously, with, and I want to talk about Europe a lot as well. But, this is a big conversation in the US right now, obviously, with the new administration in DC focusing on this issue. Give us a little bit of background as to, the involvement of crypto in sort of the gaming world, what you're seeing out there, what the trends are, and do you think that's something that could translate to the US? What do you think?
I surely hope it translates to the US. They're a big, big player, at least in the financial sector. So, when you think of the US, they set the standards for how globally we will transmit, remit currencies, value. So, the more hesitant the US is in adopting or not even adopting, but accepting the idea of crypto as a currency or as a means of transmitting value, the happier the rest of the world will be. Within the EU and offshore gaming companies, always at the far forefront of innovation, very commercially driven companies within the gaming space. They appreciate, like, look, we have to receive deposits from players. We have to make payouts. The existing banking infrastructure doesn't always really meet our needs. Sometimes it's slow. Sometimes it's asking for too many questions. It just wasn't good enough. It wasn't transparent enough. If simply when you when a player makes a deposit, if that money doesn't arrive, then you actually have to contact your bank and be like, "Hey, where's my money?" And then wait for a couple of days for for the bank to get back to you and tell you, "Well, it's here." But when you think of crypto, you can it's just there's so much transparency. You can actually trace it and be like, "Okay, I sent 500 USDT. Has it arrived? Where is the delay? Maybe I use the wrong wallet," but it's also traceable in a way. So yeah, it's been really welcomed, I would say, within the gambling space in here in the continent, and we keep on seeing it grow. And actually, recently we're even noticing a bit of an increase in betting, like. before you would see gambling or anything that you would count as gambling really adopting crypto. Now more and more betting companies are accepting and really trying to embed this idea of crypto betting within their ecosystem.
Well, and that brings up a good point. I know we were sort of bouncing around about this before we jumped on the podcast today. You know, as I look at jurisdictions I deal with, and that goes anywhere from here to the US over to Asia, in between, it's that acceptance of how that's going to work. And I go back, you know, when crypto sort of first infiltrated Las Vegas, it was the ATM Bitcoin machine that they had down at Circa. And I always remember them sharing that the biggest users of that were actually the employees that would deposit their paychecks in to put it into crypto because of everything else along the way. You know, as jurisdictions start looking at this, whether it be, you know, the US, Europe, Asia, wherever else in between, what are sort of those key measures they need to consider? Because it's part education, but it's not just with the gaming regulator, but it's with the financial regulator as well as with the player.
It's just such a harmonization exercise and a wider coordination, which maybe is unprecedented because you don't usually see regulators coming together and saying, right, the gambling industry has seen these trends and the financial industry has seen these trends. How can we prepare and present a unified front that meets our objectives across both? So you give protection to the players, both from a financial perspective, from a banking perspective, infrastructure perspective, but also from a gaming and gambling perspective. Key considerations that I would expect are probably already on the table is always you start with the source of wealth and how can you harness the technology that's available to ensure that gambling, like there's nothing new when you think of the gaming space that the source of the funds will always be a question on the table. So now the question becomes, how do we trace that using technology when payments are in crypto? And then there'll be an international element. So it's we know that regulators can be at time siloed to their specific jurisdiction, saying that, you know, I'm just regulating France or the UK. So this is all I'm going to look at. But with crypto, it becomes a little harder to know where a wallet is based. With a bank account, you can probably look at the account number and sort of figure out and say, well, why is someone with an account in the US gambling here in France? And I would expect those are some considerations that would definitely be coming up on the regulator's desk as they work their way through it.
So let me ask you a question specific about that. Source of funds and, of course, anti-money laundering issues always in this space, you know, always heightened. We're always talking about it, you know, in this regulatory space. I mean, it sounds like, you tell me if I'm wrong here, it sounds like you would argue maybe that it's actually easier to trace funds via crypto and track these things than it would be through a normal bank account. I mean, even though there's a long way it's got to go, and of course it can be true. I mean, would you say that in fact crypto may be more secure at the end of the day? Is that where you're headed?
It's hard to say if it's more secure. I think we're getting there on the crypto because everything is so new. So it's still quite susceptible to fraud and financial crime. But when it comes to tracing the source, every day I'm more and more amazed by how powerful the tools and systems are these days that allow you to monitor a wallet address. So you can see, I don't know how many hops before where a certain coin has been and whether it's been marked as a sanctioned exchange or whether it was an illicit actor or whether it had anything to do with pornography. All these things, you can actually see them leveraging these new software that are available. So you can't really tell if a dollar has been held at some point by a sanctioned individual, but you can tell if a coin has been. And then it's about setting the correct risk appetite to say, well, at which point do we say, okay, look, yes, there's that value that has moved, but at what point has that now been through sufficient hops before it arrived to your wallet to say it's probably okay?
You know, you talk about the compliance issue, and that's one of the things. As I've done some of this on the regulatory side, you know, at different parts of the world, the transparency has always been one of the keys that has been sort of one of those things that is there. How important is it on the other side going that this is a recognized form of quote unquote currency or a recognized form versus, as the age-old example, and I think I shared this with you when we were in Barcelona. You know, me bringing a cow to a casino floor and saying, "What's the commodity price on beef today?" You know, of a cow wearing a Fanatics jersey along the way here.
Did you
You
come up with that
know,
example all on your own in Barcelona, by the way? That's actually quite funny. And I just want to check in to see if you came up with that one.
I use it all the time. As you know,
It's
I'm Mr.
good. It's good. I
Consistent.
give you credit. That's a good
Consistent.
one. That's a good
I'm
one.
consistent. I threw in the Fanatics thing just because, because you
I know
know.
I got that part. I forget. Yeah.
But I mean, is that important on the you know, as states and states in the country sense, not as in the US, as governments look at this, what's the importance there of saying, yes, we recognize crypto, or does that or doesn't it matter?
I think it matters a lot. Like you see the difference between stable coins and other types of coins and the way that they're perceived or adopted more faster, both by public and the regulators, the way that they see it. But it is fundamental that, and I think we are some way behind in understanding what exactly drives cryptocurrency prices. You can look at oil prices, and there are 1,000 economical models that will tell you, well, you need to look at A, B, and C. You can look at foreign exchange. Yes, of course, there's speculation, and that's where big hedge funds make a lot of big bucks. But with crypto, I think we are quite a bit away in really being able to pin down what moves those fundamentals. And it is a concern for more central banks or authorities in what do we do? How can we control it in the way that we control our currencies or that we have that we're used to? So thinking of the dollar, if you see inflation, then you have the interest rate, you sort of manage that. But how do you control fluctuations in cryptocurrency prices? That's a whole different level that I think we are some way ago in understanding and being able to confidently say we can manage it.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Well, we are running out of time, and so I'm gonna hit you with one last question. It's a tough one now, which
Sure.
is, if you had to summarize and say, now I want to come back to where you started, which is the U.S. adoption of mainstream crypto would be huge for the industry in sort of advancing the industry forward. And I want to pause it from that and say that's where we're going to start with my question. What is your message to the US and setting the issue of gaming aside and saying, let's make this a mainstream currency? How does it, what would your advice be to the US? You've got one, you sum it up your elevator pitch to the US on crypto. What would that be?
Also, some of the brightest minds in the world live, work, do research in the US. We are envious. We look at Silicon Valley. Everyone looks up to the US and what they're doing. So it is possible to spend that resource and just have an open mind and explore the field of cryptocurrencies. And just allow it a little bit more to penetrate the markets. It's not as probably as scary or catastrophic as it might initially look like when you're faced with it.
There it is. I love it.
But I was to
Crypto is
say,
not as scary as one may think it is. I love that. You got it right there. Andrea,
yeah.
this has been wonderful. We can't thank you enough. And before, by the way, I would be absolutely remiss. Brendan and I were going to totally botch your surname. So for the listeners, how do you pronounce your last name?
Every pido.
There we go. I still
Yes,
won't
there we
get
go.
it. All right, Andrea Yee, thank you for joining us on another episode of the World Series of Politics podcast with Brent Hyde and Brendan Bussman. Listeners, we will catch you next week where there is much more to come across the world.
Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the World Series of Politics podcast with Brendan Bussman and Brent Hyde. We'll be back soon for the next coin flip. This has been an IGB production. For the latest news, views, analysis, and data on the global gaming industry, head to igamingbusiness.com.